Conversations with Other Writers, with your host, award-winning travel writer and novelist, C.M. Mayo.
Welcome to the occasional series, Conversations with Other Writers. I'm your host, C.M. Mayo, and this conversation with Mexican writer and editor, Rosemary Salum, is a very special one. It is very close to my heart, and I think you will find in it a cornucopia of discoveries. It was recorded in Mexico City in November 2013. Welcome.
Thank you, Catherine. Thank you for having me in your program.
Well, thank you. Well, I've been wanting to do this interview for the longest time because I have been a real admirer of Literal Magazine. It's Literal Latin American Voices. And your website?
My website is www.literalmagazine.com.
It's one of the very few and splendidly done bilingual literary journals looking at contemporary, well, I should let you tell me about it.
Well, it's a bilingual magazine that started almost 10 years ago when we moved to Houston. You know, I'm originally from Mexico, but 15 years ago we moved to Houston, my family and myself. And after studying there, my master's degree, I decided to start the magazine because I found that there was nothing representing Latin American culture in the United States. But it's funny because at the same time, while I was discovering that, I also found out that here in Mexico, many people was not really aware of what was going on in the United States.
It's a big disconnect.
Exactly. It's funny that you mentioned that word because when the idea of the magazine came, it came through the word connection. That was the word that came in my mind, along with an image of connecting something. And that's when, you know, I took the decision of starting the magazine.
That would have been what year exactly?
2004.
So NAFTA had already come through, but that was still a moment, I think it still is a moment, when there's a lot of disconnect. And you feel that as someone living in the other country. I mean, I'm an American living in Mexico, and you're Mexican living in Texas. Texas is its own country.
Exactly.
I'm from Texas, so I get to say that. But I see that, how so often the writers, especially the leading writers and poets and artists, are not really there's lots of exceptions, but there's just huge gulfs of ignorance between the two groups where they don't communicate, they don't understand each other. And to use one of my favorite expressions of John Tutino, there are enduring presumptions.
It's true because, and the connection happens in very different levels. I understand that sometimes authors and artists and people who are creating, sometimes they connect from one country to another, but most of the time they are disconnected. And what happens is that the United States, it's a country that pays attention to itself and to its own productions. And we've talked about this subject many times. They are not very open to translations. They are not very open to what it's been written in other countries. Mm-hmm. And in a way, Mexico has their own disconnection too. And what Mexicans or what people in Latin America know about what is going on in the United States, it happens through history. I mean, people who know that there was authors like Truman and, you know, Hemingway, but they belong to the history.
To the past,
exactly.
Not the present. So if you were to say to the average contemporary Mexican literary writer, who are your colleagues in the U.S., they might not know.
Exactly, and the same happened in the United States. While I was studying my master's degree and while I was taking my literature classes, I remember, and it was one of the moments also that made me start the magazine. Well, we were studying the authors or the Latin American literature. We were studying people from the boom, Vargas Llosa or Gabriel Garcia Marquez. And they didn't even go to Octavio Paz, for example. I mean, they stopped at the boom. You know, like if after the boom, nobody was writing anything.
Uh-huh.
So, and, you know, I remember asking one of the professors, is this all we are, you know, studying? Aren't we reading, you know, the contemporary writers? And, you know, she said, you know, no, I mean, this is it. You know, I was really shocked by that. Why we were not reading what was, you know, especially because of, you know, the subject was contemporary literature in Latin America. So why we were not reading those writers? Or why, you know, here in Mexico, they don't know anything about what's going on right now. Uh-huh. They know everything about Hemingway. They know everything.
Yeah. James Joyce, exactly. Virginia Woolf.
Exactly. So that moment really triggered, gave me the impulse to go and start the magazine.
Well, so who are some of the contemporary writers in Mexico that you're really excited about and that you've published in Literal Magazine that American writers, English language American writers, just don't have on their radar and really should?
Well, for example, we have published Mario Bellatín. He's unknown in the United States. Teddy Lopez Mill, which is a very...
I've translated her.
Yeah, she's amazing. She has won, you know, all sorts of literary awards. And actually, she's half American. She's half Mexican, half American. And, you know, nobody knows her in the United States. I mean, I know that New Directions are thinking of maybe translating her or publishing her, but very few people that know about her, for example. Pura López Colomé, which is another...
Very highly regarded here.
Yeah.
She's the translator of Seamus Heaney.
Exactly. And just recently, like a year ago, I received a book of her that was translated into English. And, you know, I was really happy to know that we even reviewed that book. But, you know, we published her long time before that. So there are many, like, you know, Malva Flores, or there are many other writers that people do not know about them. And it's kind of tragic because when you mention someone like Jorge Luis Borges, they still don't know who he was, and it's kind of sad.
Yeah, I was at a conference. I might edit this out. In Mexico for English writers. And the assumption just was that there wasn't anything worth reading, that Mexicans were taxi drivers and maids and deserving of charity or something. And there was just no concept that there was this huge literature. In fact, the first book printed in North America was printed here in Mexico City. There's a great tradition of printing and publishing and literary culture here, and just no concept of that.
It's really sad to me because, and you know, but at the same time, that also happens here in Mexico. Yesterday, I was, you know, chatting with some friends, and they were talking about people from the United States, like, you know, the same stereotype of, oh, you know, they are like this or the other. There is a profound disconnection still. I mean, it doesn't matter if we still have the internet or we have television or emails or Facebook. There is a profound disconnection between these two cultures because there are many stereotypes that come from the past that we have not gone over them. We are still carrying them with us.
The representations through the media and through the tourism industry as well that tend to reinforce certain visions that I think are really very biased of what's actually here.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this subject a lot, and I really think that it has to do with the fact that when you do not know something, you try to just go as far as you can from that thing that you don't know. So the easiest way is just to deny that thing that you don't know. Just go away, and it's easier for you instead of, like, you know, let me take the time, let me see what's going on in there, and let me think, what can I learn from that? I mean, kind of be open-minded and let that culture get into yourself, and then you can decide. Uh-huh. Then you can judge. Mm-hmm. Then you can think for yourself, not just keep repeating and repeating what has been said for so many years. And most of those things are not true anymore.
Can you give an example of something that really stands out for you in that way?
I'm hearing from my friends here. It's like, how can you live in the United States? People are very...
In Texas. Oh, the prejudice against Texas here is huge.
Yeah. And, you know, you cannot socialize with them, you cannot talk to them, they discriminate you, you know?
They just all go around with their guns.
Exactly, exactly.
Their pickup truck and their guns.
Exactly. So, and I mean, to me, so foreign. I mean, that's really foreign to me. I do not see Texas like that.
Well, you're in Houston, which has a very thriving cultural scene.
Right. And actually, Houston now is so cosmopolitan, so international. You see people from all over the world. It was not like that 15 years ago when I moved.
It has really, seen a lot of changes.
A lot of change. A lot of people from Latin America, a lot of people from Europe.
And Mexico, too.
And Mexico, even from Asia. India, a lot of people from India, a lot of people from the Middle East. It's like sometimes when you go out, you see people from all over the world. So when people tell me that, it's like, I mean, what are you talking about? Why you keep repeating that? It's not like that. It takes 2 minutes to sit down and see and let the culture come to you, and you can understand that it's not like that.
So you have based Literal Magazine in Houston, but you often come to Mexico. You're distributed here in Mexico in all the Sanborn stores, which is a big place to get magazines in Mexico, and also the main bookstores here,
right,
which would be Gandhi and Sótano.
Exactly.
And am I forgetting any?
Well, no, and then some galleries also.
Because you also publish a lot of art and a lot about art.
Right.
And Literal Magazine is very sophisticated in that regard, very unusual. So I wanted to ask you about that. You clearly have a passion not only for literature and for translation, but for art.
Yes, I'm kind of those frustrated artists that most of my life I've been thinking that I should have been an artist, a visual artist. But at the same time, what is happening right now in Houston is that there's a movement that I think was ignited by the Museum of Fine Arts when they chose Mari Carmen Ramirez as one of the Latin American curators. And she started doing a lot of research and a lot of exhibitions from artists from Latin America. So Houston has become like the center from Latin American art almost in the world.
More so than Miami.
I think so. I really think so.
Wow.
The Latin American art scene in Houston has grown so much. And it also happens to be supported by a huge amount of collectors. Maybe because of the geographic...
It's easy to get to Houston.
Houston is like the gateway. It's like the place where North America and Latin America get together.
Just physically, you get on the plane,
exactly.
And you can be in from Mexico City, you can be in Houston in what?
1 hour and 45 minutes.
A pedal jump.
Right, exactly. I mean, it's once you told me, you know, Houston, it's closer than Washington is. I mean, to me.
Oh, yeah.
So, like if I want to fly to New York, Mexico City is closer. So going back to the subject that we were talking about, Houston has become the place for Latin American art. And I want to witness that. I want Literal to be a witness of what is going on there. I want to cover most of what is happening there. There are very important artists that are being exhibited in Houston in the Museum of Fine Arts, like, you know, Carlos Cruz Diez, which is an artist from Venezuela, or Antonio Berni, who's from Argentina, Miguel Angel Rojas, who's also from Venezuela. So there's a huge scene and a huge movement that it's taking place, and I think we are in the right place at the right moment to cover that.
What has been the response to Literal in Houston?
It has been great. I could not complain because people are grateful in a way. I mean, they've told me that something like the quality of Literal is taking place there. I don't want to sound pretentious. It's just that we are missing publications in Spanish, and we are missing publications that have the quality.
Yeah.
That are showing the excellence of what is being produced in Latin America as well as in the United States, because most of the times the publications in Spanish they don't look as beautiful as they should.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying they should because if you want to show your culture, you have to kind of a little bit, you have to brag, you know, of what your culture is.
I think design is such a vital part of literary publishing, not just publishing about art per se, but literary publishing. And it's a different skill knowing how to do graphic design for a magazine, for web pages. And I think a lot of literary writers and literary editors don't have it. They don't recognize it. And yet when they do, it's like putting a beautiful painting in a beautiful frame, or the frame that it deserves. And without that, it's sometimes hard to see it. So really, I'm holding a copy, the number 34 of Literal, on my lap, because it's a big magazine. It's an oversized magazine, full color, always beautifully designed.
David Medina Portillo is the one who's designing. He does an excellent job. The other day we were talking about graphic design. It was really funny to find out that he was also studying to be an architect and he wanted to be a visual artist. And I was teasing him. I said, you know, no wonder it's so beautiful. It's you are very good at it.
Yeah, it really is beautiful. I'm looking at it right now as we speak, and it's just, I think one of the things is it's very inviting to the eye. You know, your eye does not get tired. And when it's not well designed, that often is the case. That it's, you know, we don't sometimes realize why we don't come into a text or why we get tired. And it's oftentimes just the design,
right,
which doesn't serve the piece. But you have so many interesting pieces. This one is How to Change the World. That's the Cómo Cambiar el Mundo. So it's bilingual. And you have interviews with just such an amazing array of people. So it's not just about Americans and people from Latin America. But you have an interview here by the mysterious FS and EH with Evgeny Morozov, who's from Belarus, and he has plenty to say about Silicon Valley, which is actually pretty interesting.
Right. He's really young. I didn't know he was that young. He's in his 30s or almost there. And he has been talking about how do you pronounce it? Solutionism.
Silicon Valley solutionism.
Exactly. And he's criticizing what is going on right now. We know all the technology. But what is interesting about this issue is that the fact that, you know, I talked to Rob Freeman. He came to Mexico like 5 years ago because he was promoting his book, Nobility of Spirit, in Spanish, Nobleza de Espíritu. And just by listening to the title, I was fascinated. I read the book and it was amazing because he's going back to the humanities and he wants to bring back that sense of let's go back to the person, let's go back to the human, let's study, you know, what is going on around us. Let's not go into technology and let's not forget that we are humans and that we have ideals and that we need the ideals to keep going. Otherwise, we can get lost. So when I found out that he was available for being interviewed because of this symposium that he organized in Nexus Institute, I immediately took advantage of that and I sent an interview to him, a questionnaire, and he was really kind in answering all that. It's amazing what he's doing in Europe, and sometimes you need to go outside from America and see what is happening in the world. So I thought that it was a perfect fit for the magazine, so we decided to interview him and all the people that were participating in that symposium.
It's really a wide-ranging issue. It strikes me, though, as not that unusual in the overall range of what you do. Many of your issues really reach out to very unexpected people, artists, poets, short story writers, novelists, from the super famous to the up and coming, but also thinkers, as you say, from other countries. Really, I'm always surprised in every issue. I'm surprised by someone I've never heard of saying something just that I've never thought of. So it's a very stimulating magazine in all senses. Anything but parochial.
Thank you so much, Catherine. You know, I'm happy that you like that part because some people don't like the fact that sometimes a magazine can be intellectual. Mm-hmm. But my background is in the humanities. When I studied my degree, I studied philosophy, literature, arts, and history. And, you know, it's funny how the other day I was thinking about the magazine and I found out that kind of the magazine is a reflection of that, that has a little bit of everything. It has a part that has to do with the philosophy or with thought, people reflecting on an issue that is going on in the world and giving you their perspective. There's also a section that it's about literature. We also give a room to poetry, mm-hmm. to reviews, to short stories. There's another section that has to do with the arts. And there's a section that sometimes, you know, this is not a constant in all the issues. We call it flashback. And sometimes we have someone reflecting or thinking about, you know, what had just happened in the past and, you know, bringing that issue in today's world. So I really enjoy doing the magazine because I enjoy all those subjects. And I understand some people do not like that. And people have told me that, you know, I don't like your magazine, it's very intellectual. Or the other day a person told me, you know, it's too dense for me. And
it's not for them.
So, I mean, it's okay. At the beginning, I was mortified by that. But now it's like, you know, such is life. And
you can't please everybody.
Exactly. I received a suggestion of people that, you know, you should make it different. You should make it more accessible to people. To be honest, I don't think it's inaccessible. I think, I mean, if you just sit down and read it, you can understand everything that it's been said there. But on the other side, I think I couldn't do something that I don't believe in to start with. But mainly, if I don't know how to do something that it's more commercial, then it will be a disaster. That's what I think. So just might as well stay in the realm of what you know.
And what you have a passion for, because that's what really drives bringing it out every month and doing it. It's not an easy thing to do.
No, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work, and it takes a lot of sacrifice to polish it.
I know. I used to do a bilingual magazine. It's much more work than it looks like. But there's fun moments, too, and one of them is when you bring it to the Feria de Libros. Yes. And a lot of people listening may not know what that is. That's important to have on your cultural radar if you live anywhere in the world, but especially North America.
Yes, I really enjoy going to the book fairs, because then you find the people who really enjoy these kind of publications. So to me, it's like a huge luxury to find someone that, you know, is really interested in the magazine, or people who are collecting the magazine, or they want to be published there, or they want me to be aware of something that it's taking place, something that it's happening, something that it's being published. To me, it's amazing to go to those book fairs. And also because you get to know new people that you were not aware of them. You were not aware that they were producing a novel or... I mean, at the end, it's impossible to know everything about, you know, everybody. So you learn a lot going to the book fairs.
They're pretty impressive. The one you're going to this weekend, we're speaking in November, the end of November 2013, is the Feria de Libros in Guadalajara, which is... if I'm not mistaken, the biggest one in Latin America.
Right. Actually, in the Spanish world, it's the biggest in the world right now. I'm not sure if in the future still will be the book fair in Spanish, but it's even bigger than the one in Spain or other places in Latin America. So it's really a joy because they also bring people who are from all over the world and Nobel laureates, and so it's great.
It's not something on most Americans' cultural radar. They don't think of that when they think of Mexico.
Exactly.
But for the Mexican literary community, well, really for the literary community throughout Latin America, that's a mecca. It's an enormously prestigious thing to be able to present your book at, how do you say, the FIL, the Feria Internacional de Libros, at the FIL in Guadalajara.
Right.
So who's going? And see and be seen. It can be a little overwhelming, too.
It is really overwhelming. But many American writers, I've met them in La FIL. So, So that's amazing. There's always a group of people who know about these things that are taking place in Mexico.
Well, this year, isn't the fair for Israel?
Yeah.
Israel is the country of honor at the FIL.
Right.
And you're presenting a book.
Yes, I'm presenting a book. It's an anthology that it's called Delta de las Arenas, Cuentos Árabes, Cuentos Judíos, which is an anthology of Latin American writers that they have either Jewish or Arabic ascendants. So there are many writers that their parents moved from the Middle East to Latin America, and a lot of people who are, you know, Jewish who are also writing here. So my grandparents are from Lebanon, so I have, you know, I've been close to these cultures since my childhood. So when the other day, you know, I was invited to put together an anthology of Latin American writers with Arabic descent. So when I was putting together that anthology, it occurred to me that I should create this space of dialogue between these two cultures, with, at the same time, with similar backgrounds. So it was a joy to put together that anthology and to find out that many Jewish writers had the same perception and the same questions about identity as the Arabic writers. So to me it was a huge discovery, and to put it together, it made a perfect sense. It was a joy to put together that.
Tell us the title again.
Delta de las Arenas.
So how would you put that in English? The Delta of the Sands?
Exactly. The Delta of the Sands.
Yeah.
Jewish and Arabic short stories.
It's a very poetic image.
It was suggested to me by David Medina. It was not my own. I didn't come out with that title. I had different ideas. But when we were talking about the titles and he mentioned that, I said, can I have it?
It's beautiful.
It is.
Well, many people who don't read in Spanish or are not that familiar with Mexican and Latin American culture are not aware that there really was a very large immigration from the Middle East. When was it? The end of the 19th century and the beginning of the 20th century. And that many people in the arts in Latin America and also in business, in academia, in politics, really in all sectors, have this background or partial background. It's really very present once you get outside of, I don't know, Cabo San Lucas or Cancun. It's like, whoa, no. So there are a lot of Salma Hayek, the famous actress,
exactly.
And of course Carlos Slim. And who are some of the writers that are in your anthology that you're really excited about bringing out?
For example, Ana Maria Shua. Actually, she has been translated into English, and it's, you know, she has her own audience in the United States. She's from Argentina and she's Jewish. Margot Glantz, who's from Mexico, and she's also Jewish, and she has won all sorts of awards. Barbara Jacobs, she's also from Mexico, but she's half American and half Mexican, but her background is all Lebanese. So it's funny because her father is from the United States and her mother from Mexico, but with this background. Eduardo Halfon, his grandparents are Arabic, but at the same time are Jewish. But he's from Guatemala. So you find all these mixtures that give you or bring you the news that Latin America, it's a mixture of nationality.
Very heterogeneous ethnically.
Exactly.
Far more so than it might appear at first glance.
Exactly. So people will think that, you know, in Mexico, the population are mestizos. And of course, there are a lot of people like that, but there are so many people from Europe, from Spain, from Asia, from
Africa,
especially in the Gulf Coast. So Mexico has a humongous richness in their culture, and it's not very well appreciated. People have the tendency of think of Mexicans like you were saying, you know, they are good for gardening or, you know, but it's not true. We have this magnificent culture that needs to be known in all over the world.
Well, you're doing that with Literal in a very beautiful way.
Thank you. And it's funny, Catherine, when you moved from your own place, and I'm sure this has happened to you, you have the tendency of knowing your country better in a way.
Oh, yes.
Appreciate what your country is, and also learn other cultures and be more open to those cultures.
That's very true.
If you are open enough, you learn to keep the best of both cultures.
And I think, too, you can see opportunities. There are certain areas of blindness that we all have when we stay in one place with one point of view, and you kind of get yourself out of that little box, and then you suddenly say, oh, there's this opportunity, or nobody's doing that, or how come nobody's doing the other thing? And I get the sense that that's very much what's happened with this, that there was a big hueco, like a big hollow spot. There was a place that needed to be filled, that still needs to be filled, and you're doing that with Literal and with the books that you're doing.
I wish there were more publications that were connecting or reaching out to the other country. There are very few. In the past, there was Tameme, your project.
Mm-hmm.
There was another one that was called El Corno.
I know. I always get the name of that thing
emplumado,
wrong. The Cuerno
Emplumado.
Cuerno Emplumado. or Coronado Emplumado. So that was in the 60s, and they were publishing, and then more recently there's been Mandorla, which is still around.
I think so.
There have been a lot of different things, but nothing, I think, with the reach of Litoral magazine. And you've also stayed with it for 34 issues.
Yes.
I mean, mis respetos. I think it's harder to do a magazine than it appears. You know, a lot of people get the idea to do it, and then, like me, they flame out after a few issues. It's like, oh, my God, what did I get into? But I think also the biggest challenge of this making a bridge is language. And quality translation is tough. And then you have to have someone do the copy editing for you in two different languages. And, you know, I think a lot of people don't understand how you can be fluent. But, I mean, I've lived in Mexico City for 25 years, and I translate Mexican writers into English. But believe me, my Spanish is not. I need somebody to translate me or to fix it. It's like, oh my God. So when I did Tememe, I worked with Berta Ruiz de la Concha, who did the copy editing of the Spanish and also a lot of different translators. But what that means is added expense and more people to deal with. And that makes it even harder. So we do have these barriers, among many other barriers. The biggest one, though, I think, is just ignorance and prejudice.
Exactly. When you work in a project like this, you have to handle all sorts of things that are taking place at the same time, and you have to be really good at coordinating all those things that are popping up every single day. But you are really true when you say that translation is really one of the toughest parts, because to find a good translator, it's really hard. But the ignorance part is the worst. You are right. Sometimes when I hand the magazine to someone and he or she happens to see a word in English, they will say, oh, you know, I don't speak English, don't give it to me.
I had that with Tememe, and it always amazed me because I thought it was completely bilingual.
Exactly, but they don't.
Like, you can read it. It's for you. And they'd be like, no, stop for me. You know, scary. Yeah. Spanish or English, that's scary.
Right. It's hard. I mean, sometimes it's disappointing, but some other times it's really rewarding. People like it and appreciate it. But mostly, you know, I'm doing this for, you know, the impulse of connecting the cultures. And now we are moving to the books. We are moving to the publisher house. And this year we published 8 titles.
That's a lot. That's impressive. Tell us about those.
Well, we have 2 series. One of the series, it's called Dislocados. And that series is, I'm working with Gisela Jefes. She's from Rice University. And the two of us decided to start this project where we will publish all the writers that are writing in Spanish from the United States.
Which is a big group of people.
Exactly.
I'm interrupting you because I'm just passionate about this. When I edited Tememe, I had the idea that it would be the U.S., Mexico, and Canada. Bilingual English, Spanish, that was my concept. And when I started inviting submissions, I was astonished at the veritable avalanche. Some of it really good. In Spanish from the United States. I was really amazed by that. I really didn't appreciate that there was this whole literary scene there in very high quality, very, very good. And I think that's just completely off people's radars.
You know what happened when you live in the United States or when you move to the United States, you start losing your connections in your literary realm, in your country. So when it comes the time to publish your own book, you don't have any connections, you don't know anybody. When you send your stuff for submissions, nobody even know who you are, and they don't pay attention to your material. And some other people, they just give up and they say, you know what, I cannot publish this anymore. The more established authors, what they do is they send it to Spain or the big publisher houses in Latin America. What happened with the authors that are not very well known in the Spanish scene, they get trapped in a limbo. There are no venues where you can, you know, canalize all these productions.
Maybe now it's changing with blogs. I think a lot of them have started blogs and self-publishing.
And the big publisher houses are understanding that they also need to sell their books in Spanish because they have a lot of people that read in Spanish. So when Gisela and I were talking about this subject, we decided to talk to Rice University, and we got their support. And we started this series that it's called Dislocados. And so far, we have published 3 books. One it's called Poéticas de los Dislocamientos, where it's an anthology of essays about what it means to be writing Spanish in the United States. So that was the first book, which was the opening book for, you know, giving space for or putting the tone to what the series was going to be all about. The second book is Diálogos conmigo y mis otros by Isaac Goldenberg. He's from Peru, but he's been living in New York for 30 years or so. The third book is very well-known Chilean writer. Her name is Lina Meruane, and her title is Volverse Palestina, which is chronic. She
means become Palestinian again.
Become Palestinian, exactly, again. She lives in also in New York, and she traveled to Palestina, and she decided to write a chronicle of her trip there. And she is a very well-known writer in Latin America. She's a very good one. So we are very lucky to have that book. And the coming books, one is by Carmen Bullosa, and another one is by Gerardo Piña, and another one is by Gisela Jefe. So next semester we'll have another 3 books in that series. And the other series that we have, it's called Lateral, and it's a bilingual series. And all the books that we will publish there are bilingual.
So you can read them whether you read in English or Spanish,
exactly.
Or both?
Exactly.
For both. That's fantastic. Well, it's a really exciting time to be in publishing. It's a crazy time, but it's an exciting time.
Yes. We were just mentioning that. We were talking about that just a while ago, how it can be really scary. But at the same time, it gives you a lot of freedom to, if you are creative enough and you have the impulse, you can do very nice things.
Well, what you've done is beautiful.
Thank you, Catherine.
Absolutely beautiful. So if people want to find out more about your books and the magazine is distributed in what stores?
The magazine is distributed here in Mexico in bookstores and Sanborns. In the United States, you can either find it in independent bookstores, but also through Amazon, or also you can just go to our website, which is www.literalmagazine.com. And you can subscribe there. Many people who receive the magazine are subscribers. And people from the United States and Canada, it's for them it's really easy because the mail system is good. I mean, at least it's better than the one in Mexico.
And there's a lot of content that you put on the website.
Right.
So even people who aren't subscribing, although it would be wonderful if they all subscribed, you should subscribe. Subscribe. But a person can come and read some of the content on the website.
Exactly.
And your blog. And you also have a Twitter handle, right?
Yeah, we have a Twitter account. We have one in Facebook. We have one in Instagram and Pinterest. But mostly we are very active in Twitter and Facebook. But yeah, you're right. We have an archive, our website, and you can find all the magazines from, you know, the very first one. And
so, wow, that's impressive.
And it's for free. And you can,
even more impressive.
You just go there, okay. And we have a search box. You just put the author you are looking for, and you'll have, you know, all the results. You'll get them there. You can download the magazines in a PDF where you can appreciate, you know, the nice design that David Medina does. And you can find absolutely everything. And moreover, you can find some of the articles that were published only in English or only in Spanish. You can find them there in both languages. So
literalmagazine.com.
Exactly.
Rosemary, thank you so much for this fascinating interview. It's really always a pleasure to talk with you.
No, and thank you for, you know, giving me the space to talk about this project. Thank you. I appreciate it.
It's an honor. Thank you. Thanks for listening. To listen in anytime to my other conversations with other writers, I invite you to visit my webpage, cmmayo.com. Click on Digital Media and Podcasts. There you will find links to listen in to conversations with novelist Sergio Troncoso,
author of many works, including The Last Tortilla and From This Wicked Patch of Dust, a conversation with historian Michael K. Schussler, author of the biographies of Pita Amor and Elena Poniatowska, and editor of Alma Reed's long-lost autobiography, Peregrina, Love and Death in Mexico. A conversation with Edward Swift, one of my very favorite writers, author of the memoir My Grandfather's Finger, and who lives in Mexico in San Miguel de Allende and often travels into the remote Sierra Gorda for creative inspiration. A conversation with Sarah Mansfield Tabor, talking about her extraordinary memoir, one of the best books I've ever read, Born Under an Assumed Name, the memoir of a Cold War spy's daughter. Solveig Eggerts, about her haunting novel based on a true story of Iceland, Seal Woman. I also host other podcast series, including the Marfa Mondays podcasting project, exploring Marfa, Texas, and the greater Big Bend region of Far West Texas in 24 podcasts. If you'd like to be alerted when a new podcast is available, I would be delighted to add your name to my email list. You can sign up for my automatic opt-in newsletter on my webpage, cmmayo.com. Until next time.